most people, when they hear Columbine Massacre, because, you know, last week you would see Facebook posts from Columbine High School when the two boys came in and killed their classmates and the teacher. So the most people think, well, that's the Columbine Massacre. But the first Columbine Massacre was November 21st, 1927, right pretty much at County Line Road. There was a massive statewide strike going on, and the Prohibition police, most of them Ku Klux Klan members, had recently been put into service as strike police. And there were daily protests at the Columbine Mine because it was one of the few coal mines in the state that was trying to stay open. It was run by the Rocky Mountain Fuel Company. It was a company town, ironically, I guess, called Serene, not so serene. And about 500 protesters marched on this company town, and these state police fired into the crowd, killing six, probably wounding 60. And that became known as the Columbine Massacre, especially to the workers at that time. So it was the turning point of the strike, but you know.
But this came after years and years of labor struggles around coal mines. So, for example, Ludlow,
right.
You say Ludlow is much more better known, but not necessarily in the vernacular of everybody. Well,
right. So, you know, Ludlow, if you're a labor history person, you know what it is. And a lot of people who know about Colorado history know about Ludlow. And Ludlow usually gets a nod in most textbooks. It's mentioned. It's famous because on April 20th, 1914, the Ludlow Massacre, what became to be called the Ludlow Massacre, took place, and that was in the midst of another coal strike, this one from 1910 to 1914. And the most violent phase of that strike from 1913 to 1914 unfolded in Colorado's southern coal fields down around, you know, Trinidad. And when those miners joined the strike, they were kicked out of their company housing. And so the miners, the United Mine Workers, which was the organization, you know, sponsoring the strike, set up tent colonies. So families moved to these tent colonies, and they were fired into. The tents caught on fire, and 11 children and 2 women were found dead, and that became known as the Ludlow Massacre. It was a very violent strike. At least one historian's estimate, at least 75 people died. So it may be the deadliest labor conflict in American history. So people have probably heard the word Ludlow. You know, Woody Guthrie wrote a song about it. And then Howard Zinn was working on the docks and he heard the song and he said, wait a minute, how come I've never heard about Ludlow? And so that really, he credits that as this foundational moment when he started asking the question, how come I don't know so much about so much American history. And that really started his whole investigation that led to people's history of the United States. So that's why most people came to hear about Ludlow. And in fact, when George McGovern was running for president against Richard Nixon in 1972, he polished off his 1950s PhD dissertation about that 13 to 14 violent phase of the strike and wrote a book about it. And it became, you know, well known. But at that point, it didn't really resonate with the labor movement like he hoped it would. But it did resonate with young people who were getting fired on by the National Guard. So it became sort of a countercultural moment.
So we're talking about these little known histories. You spent much of your professional career as a history teacher. How are these stories covered in textbooks?
Well, yeah, that's the point. You know, when you teach U.S. history, you, for as long as I did, you start to sort of memorize these textbooks. And there's this narrative. I call it our national origin myth, right? And although these histories change a little bit over time, the structures of the chapters don't really change at all. And boy, do I have that narrative memorized. And so, you know, Ludlow usually gets dropped into the progressives chapter, and it'll mention the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire Factory. You know, for example, where 115 women jumped out of the windows of Manhattan because their factory was on fire. And then Ludlow, you know, will be mentioned because it was so violent. And then it's like, but the progressives, they were outraged. You know, so they came along and they were horrified by the excesses from the top corporate people. And they thought workers should be treated better. So they wanted to come together and, you know, fix these problems. So Ludlow gets like a sentence or two, which isn't a lot. But I mean, it's more than what you hear about from labor conflicts in the 20s, which is zero, you know, because if you look at the 1920s chapters, you know, you get the Charleston, you get the Republican presidents, you get mass culture and stuff. And the word I kept coming across when it had to do with workers in the 1920s was quiescent. The workers were quiescent, you know? And so my question was like, well, if they were so quiescent, how did they rise up in the 1930s? This doesn't make sense to me. And so that's really what got me interested. That and the fact that the strike in Colorado in 27, 28 was led by the industrial workers of the world, which every textbook says dies out at, you know, during the World War I era. And I'm like, if they were dead, how did they lead a statewide strike? Maybe they weren't so dead, you know?
Well, there's lots of fascinating history here. We have very little time. Mm-hmm. You will be at the Boulder Bookstore tonight. Tell folks about what they can expect.
Well, it starts at 6:30. I hope it's fun. I've invited everybody I've ever known, so I'll see if they show up or not. Boulder Bookstore said I can talk for 30 minutes and that's it. And so for a former teacher, that's terrible because I can talk for 30 hours without probably taking a breath. But I will try to cover the highlights of the book, the organization of the book. I won't do a lot of reading because, frankly, I'm not a very good reader when it comes to that kind of stuff. So I'll just talk about the book and then take lots of questions from people who I hope have some. You know,
well, my last question for you is, what can the history of Columbine and Ludlow teach labor movements of today?
My big picture, you know, is that nobody gave organized labor anything. Nobody gave workers anything. So a lot of the textbooks that I taught from portrayed FDR and, you know, leader of the United Mine Workers, John L. Lewis, as these, it was sort of this great men, great deeds form of history. Oh, isn't it wonderful that they gave workers the right to organize? And didn't that change everything? And aren't these labor laws that got written in the 1930s awesome? Well, you know, not so much. Those laws were written because people were scared to death of these militant workers. And it's always militant workers who drive the labor movement. And we're starting to see inklings of that today where workers rise up. So, you know, don't depend. The idea is that it's the workers that drive change, not politicians.
Lee Campbell Hale, author of the new book, Remembering Ludlow But Forgetting the Columbine. Thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thanks for having me.
And you can catch her at the Boulder Bookstore later tonight at 6:30.